Today is Wednesday, August the 7th, 2024. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how big tech companies and our government are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a 3-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at pcradioshow.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live. That's PRN.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on PRN.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your questions or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. Google loses antitrust case over search engine dominance. A federal judge ruled that Google engaged in illegal practices to preserve its search engine monopoly, delivering a major antitrust victory to the Justice Department in its efforts to rein in Silicon Valley technology giants. Google, which performs about 90% of the world's internet searches, exploited its market dominance to stomp out competitors. U.S. District Judge Amit P. Mehta in Washington, D.C. said in a long-awaited ruling, Google is a monopolist, and it has acted as one to maintain its monopoly. Mehta wrote in his 276-page decision released on Monday, in which he also faulted the company for destroying internal messages that could have been useful in the case. Mehta agreed with the central argument made by the Justice Department and 38 states and territories that Google suppressed competition by paying billions of dollars to operators of web browsers and phone manufacturers to be their default search engine. That allowed the company to maintain a dominant position in the sponsored text advertising that accompanies search results, Mehta said. Kent Walker, president of global affairs at Google parent Alphabet, said the company planned to appeal the ruling. This decision recognizes that Google offers the best search engine, but concludes that we shouldn't be allowed to make it easily available, he said in a written statement that quoted complimentary passages from Meta's decision. As this process continues, we will remain focused on making products that people find helpful and easy to use. Justice Department Antitrust Chief Jonathan Cantor said the decision paves the path for innovation for generations to come and protects access to information for all Americans. Mehta oversaw a 10-week non-jury trial in the case last fall, which featured testimony from Alphabet Chief Executive Sundar Pichai and Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella. Mehta is now expected to consider what remedies to impose on Google to restore competition. That process could involve more court hearings over several months. Mehta also criticized Google for automatically erasing chat messages after 24 hours, saying he was taken aback by the length to which Google goes to avoid creating a paper trail for regulators and litigants. However, the judge said he didn't impose punishments for that behavior requested by the government because the sanctions plaintiffs request do not move the needle on the court's assessment of Google's liability. Google had argued that its auto-erase policy was explicitly disclosed to plaintiffs years earlier, undercutting the argument that it intended to destroy evidence. Google's appeal could mean it will be years until the case is finally resolved, either via a settlement or final judgment by the courts. Google is expected to appeal, and additional years of litigation could be ahead. Nonetheless, Meta's ruling could force Google to change how it does business, as the company is under heightened scrutiny at home and abroad. The European Union's competition regulators recently announced a renewed investigation into Google's App Store practices, and the company faces a September trial in a different antitrust case in which the Justice Department alleges Google illegally monopolizes the market for technology used to broker digital advertising. This is really a big moment for that movement to bring big tech under control, said Rebecca Hall Allensworth, an antitrust professor at Vanderbilt University Law School, who has written critically about Google and other tech companies. Allensworth said Meta would most likely issue an injunction against Google's search deals or require the users affirmatively choose which search engine they use in browsers, rather than automatically using one that paid for its default position. It is possible the judge could limit when and how Google pays for its search engine to get prime placement on devices such as Apple's iPhones. In 2022, Google paid Apple $20 billion, that's with a B, to maintain its default status on Apple devices, court documents show. The case before Meta dates back to October 2020, when the Justice Department sued Google during the final months of the Trump administration. A bipartisan group of state attorney generals also sued the company, and the two cases were consolidated. The Google case was the first of several antitrust lawsuits the federal government filed against some of the nation's leading tech companies, following years of criticism that U.S. enforcers have been too timid in providing a check on their growing dominance. Monday's decision could give a boost to pending government's cases alleging anti-competitive conduct by Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Meta platforms. Google is also waiting for a California judge to prescribe changes to its mobile app store business after, in December, losing a case brought by Fortnite maker Epic Games. It plans to appeal. While the search-focused case dates back to the Trump era, it has been a priority for President Biden's Justice Department, which has pledged to be aggressive in policing dominant firms. Cantor is a longtime Georgia Google foe who has criticized the concentration of power and influence among a handful of technology companies. He brought the department's second sweeping antitrust lawsuit against Google focused on its advertising technology. That case, set for a non-jury trial beginning September the 9th in Virginia, alleges Google has an illegal monopoly on the tools that power the $250 billion digital advertising market. The Justice Department accuses Google of distorting the auctions used to place ads on websites and of locking customers into using Google's products, claims the company denies. In March, Cantor accused Apple of using an unlawful tactic to lock consumers into the iPhone ecosystem. Apple has said the lawsuit is legally and factually wrong. The Federal Trade Commission, which shares antitrust enforcement authority with the Justice Department, is meanwhile pressing forward with a lawsuit that seeks to unwind Meta's acquisitions of Instagram and WhatsApp on the grounds that the company sought to foreclose competition by buying up potential rivals. Meta has denied the FTC claims, saying it faces fierce competition and it isn't a monopoly. The Federal Trade Commission also sued Amazon last year, alleging it wields monopoly power that kept prices artificially high, a claim the retail giant denies. The government's offensive against Google has drawn comparisons to the Justice Department's landmark antitrust case against Microsoft in 1998, the last similar monopolization case against a top U.S. tech firm. The department won that case, which eventually resulted in a settlement that required numerous changes to Microsoft's business practices. A historic law would protect kids online, holding tech companies accountable. Kristen Bride, lost her 16-year-old son, Carson, to suicide in 2020. She says shortly before he took his own life, he was bullied on the social media site Snapchat. Shortly after her son's death, Bride joined Parents for Safe Online Spaces, an organization of families who lost their children after they were exposed to toxic online content. Some died by suicide after cyberbullying or sextortion. Others after participating in viral challenges involving self-harm or taking drugs sold by online dealers. Last year, a group of bipartisan senators introduced the Kids Online Safety Act, a groundbreaking piece of legislation addressing growing concern from parents about the impact of online and social media platforms on children and teens. The legislation passed the Senate with strong bipartisan support earlier this week, and the measure now heads to the Republican-led House. New law will require companies to limit harmful content. The last time Congress passed a law to protect children on the Internet was in 1998, before Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and smartphones. The legislation would require tech companies to implement measures to help protect kids from exposure to harmful content. For example, companies would be prohibited from using algorithms to push content that underage users did not specifically search for. This addresses a huge concern of parents and advocates that kids are targeted with content that promotes harmful behavior, such as eating disorders, sexual exploitation, and substance abuse. The bill would also raise the maximum age of children covered under the law to 17, ban companies from collecting data from minors, including biometric indicators such as fingerprints, voice prints, and facial imagery, and improve parental controls. Josh Golan is the executive director of Fair Play, a nonprofit working to protect kids from marketing and dangerous online content from big tech. For the first time ever, social media and other online platforms will have a legal responsibility to consider how they are impacting children, Golan says. Golan says it's important for online platforms and members of Congress to recognize that regulating the use of social media for their kids has become overwhelming for families. Advocates hope new law will help fight cyberbullying. All 50 states have laws against bullying, and every state except Wisconsin and Alaska includes specific references to cyberbullying. Currently, there are no federal laws that criminalize cyberbullying. More challenges do lie ahead. Along with a safety bill, the Senate also passed online privacy legislation that would prohibit online companies from collecting personal data from kids under the age of 17 without their consent. Android iOS users are warned against about juice jacking. There is a warning out for smartphone users, regardless of whether they use a handset running iOS or one loaded with Android. The warning cautioned travelers not to use USB port in a hotel to charge their phones due to an attack known as juice jacking. The FBI warned the public that they should avoid using free charging stations in not just hotels, but also in airports and shopping centers. At the time, the FBI noted that the criminals had figured out ways to use these charging stations to infect phones with malware. The agency suggested that phone owners carry their own chargers and USB cords and use an electrical outlet instead. Plugging into one of these USB charging stations can also allow a criminal to access your personal data, and we don't have to tell you what that theft of that information can lead to, but we will anyway. Once your passwords, social security numbers, and bank and securities account numbers are in the hands of cyber criminals, you can have these accounts wiped out and your credit cards used for expensive purchases that you did not authorize. Android 15's lockdown mode protects Android users from juice jacking. Android phones and iPhones models and iPhone models from the iPhone 15 line and later are equipped with a USB charging port that is also used to transfer data. With a lockdown mode in Android 15 enabled, when the USB port is used for charging, data transfers are blocked from taking place. This allows Android users to charge using a public USB charging station without fear of having their personal data stolen. Remember that the lockdown mode needs to be enabled first. To enable lockdown mode on your Android, press the power and volume up buttons simultaneously. A pop-up should appear on the screen. Tap lockdown. This will turn off notifications, fingerprint unlocking, and extend unlock while on your lock screen. It also will prevent the USB port on your Android phone from being used to transfer data while using the port to charge the battery. To block the USB-C or Lightning port on iPhone models from being used to transfer data, go to Settings, Face ID and Passcode, or Touch ID and Passcode. Scroll to the bottom and turn the accessories toggle off. 1 hour after the iPhone has been locked, the USB-C or Lightning port cannot be used to transfer data. Just avoid using public USB charging station and bring your own power-up power bank wherever you go. But if your power bank is dead or at home and you need to charge your phone's battery, the public USB charging station can look tempting. So if you have an Android phone, make sure lockdown mode is enabled before you use the charging station. If you have an iPhone, make sure you have the accessories toggled off for at least 1 hour since you last unlocked the phone before you start charging. USU's TikTok says that the company violated children's online privacy law. The Justice Department sued TikTok on Friday, accusing the company of violating children online privacy law and running afoul of a settlement it had reached with another federal agency. The complaint, filed together with the Federal Trade Commission, that's the FTC, in a California federal court, comes as the U.S. and prominent social media company are embroiled in yet another legal battle that will determine if and how TikTok will continue to operate in the country. The latest lawsuit focuses on allegations that TikTok, a trend-setting platform popular among young users, and its China-based parent company, ByteDance, violated a federal law that requires kid-oriented apps and websites to get parental consent before collecting personal information of children under 13. TikTok did not immediately respond to a request for comment. This action is necessary to prevent the defendants, who are repeat offenders and operate on a massive scale, from collecting and using young children's private information without any parental consent or control. Brian M. Boynton, head of the Justice Department's Civil Division, said in a statement, "The United States decided to file the lawsuit following an investigation by the FTC that looked into whether the companies were complying with a previous settlement involving TikTok's predecessor, Musical.ly. In 2019, the federal government sued Musical.ly, alleging it violated the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, or COPPA, by failing to notify parents about its collection and use of personal information for kids under 13. That same year, Musical.ly, acquired by ByteDance in 2017 and merged with TikTok, agreed to pay $5.7 million to resolve those allegations. The two companies were also subject to a court order requiring them to comply with COPPA, which the government says hasn't happened. In a complaint, the Justice Department and the FTC allege TikTok has knowingly allowed children to create accounts and retain their personal information without notifying their parents. This practice extends to accounts created in Kids Mode, a version of TikTok for children under 13, the Justice Department said in a press release explaining the lawsuit. The two agencies allege the information collected included activities on the app and other identifiers used to build user profiles. They also accuse TikTok of sharing the data with other companies, such as Meta's Facebook and an analytics company called AppsFlyer, to persuade Kids Mode users to be on the platform more, a practice TikTok called retargeting less active users. The complaint says TikTok also allowed children to create accounts without having to provide their age or obtain parental approval by using credentials from third-party services. It classified these as age-unknown accounts, which the agencies say have grown into millions. After parents discovered some of the parents' accounts and asked for them to be deleted, federal officials said their requests were not honored. In a press release explaining the lawsuit, the Justice Department said the alleged violations have resulted in millions of children under 13 using the regular TikTok app, allowing them to interact with adults and access adult content. In March of this year, a person with the matter had told the Associated Press the Federal Trade Commission's investigation was also looking into whether TikTok violated a portion of a federal law that prohibits unfair and deceptive business practices by denying that individuals in China had access to U.S. user data. Those allegations were not included in the complaint, which is seeking civil penalties and injunctive relief. Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and how they all interact. One of the recent issues that has been going on is a matter of fake job listings. Now, before I go too far into this, I am not referring to the scam listings. I'm not talking about the scammers that reach out and say you can make $3,000 a month in your spare time by stuffing envelopes or anything like that. And I'm not talking about where you go and you look up the company and you can't find any information on it, or the entire correspondence says, these folks really, they're not good communicators. And there's a number of different signs all the way along that say, yeah, this is a scam job and you need to watch out for it, whether you have to pay for it or you have to buy something or you have to share truly confidential information. For instance, you should never give over your social security number until you actually have the job offer in hand, you've gone through the full interview process, all of that. I mean, we're talking way down the line. So let's eliminate the scams. Let's put those off to the side. What I'm referring to here is a variety of issues where there are ghost jobs, and there was a recent article or a series of articles that have come out in regards to these job ads that are showing up on company websites, on places like LinkedIn or Monster or Indeed or wherever it is. And especially in the IT industry, we're seeing a lot of these where these job listings will go up and they will actually not have a job lined up behind this. They're testing the waters, perhaps. Or they're going through and they're trying to create an impression to the world, to various employees on the inside, that they are doing great. We are doing so great. We've got 150 jobs that we have to fill because life is going so great here at XYZ Corporation. But it's not. It's all just fluff there, just to keep things interesting, I guess. Another route is perhaps not trying to build up positive information about the company, but perhaps to utilize that as a negative impression upon current employees who may be concerned about their job. You know, imagine this, you're working for a company and your job position all of a sudden shows up on the postings around the world. Oh, hey, we're looking for someone who does ABC, and that job offer or all of that job posting looks like it's for my job, and I'm the only one who does this, and I don't need any additional help. So they start scaring people, and that is either way you look at that, those are wrong things to do. Here is the scary part. Resume Builder went on out and they did a survey of 650 hiring managers. And what they found out was 40% of companies have posted a fake job listing this year. Worse yet, 3 in 10 companies, 30% of them, currently have fake listings on their sites or on job boards. And this is, from an employee perspective, this is not only wrong, it's really scary. I will tell you that one of the issues that I like to live by, and I think all employees truly want to live by, is just honest communication, being forthright and above board in all that they do. And it's scary that HR or hiring managers would stoop to this level. And to what level? Okay, we're talking a large number of these folks are saying, yeah, we do this, so what? As a matter of fact, they're saying 7 in 10 say that, oh, this practice is morally acceptable and it's beneficial for business. What? No, there is a process that we should be following. Look, if you have a job, yes, put out feelers, try to find someone to fill that position. But don't just waste the time of people who are hunting for jobs. Don't even give a chance to start into the process, because people will invest energy and effort into this. You're no better than any of the scammers if you're posting fake job listings or these ghost jobs, really. And that gets into another item that also hit the news this last week. A judge ordered Wells Fargo to undergo this lawsuit because they allegedly defrauded shareholders by proclaiming their commitment to hiring diversity, even though they weren't really considering non-white or female applicants, which they had no plans to hire. It's interesting because it's backed up by employee-submitted complaints. It's backed up by a particular manager who just immediately retired after pressuring a whistleblower who he had doing fake interviews. There's a lot of this fraudulent kind of things going on here. The SEC did a big, huge investigation into the hiring practices of Wells Fargo, and they're standing firm. They're saying, oh, we're going to fight this. Look, if you come across any of these things, feel free to post them out on Glassdoor or any of these different job posting sites and say, hey, look, I don't think this is real. I don't think this is actually a job that's actually going to be coming through. I hate to encourage people to act like Karens or anything like that, but at some point in time, we do have to speak up. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Force Windows PC updates are disruptive. Updates are an important part of your system for security and stability reasons. However, the Windows 10 and Windows 11 policy of forced updates has become a subject of controversy and one of its least liked features. While Microsoft aims to make Windows more efficient by pushing updates, the idea of forced updates have caused problems for users. Forced updates are happening during user working hours. Windows users are expressing frustration about being blindsided by a software update shutting down their system with little warning and installing unwanted apps. The update has been a point of contention with users, with some stating that Microsoft is overstepping its bounds. At least when Microsoft began forced Windows 10 updates, Windows 11 was not affected. Well, times have changed. A quick sweep of the web shows a lot of people searching how to stop forced Windows 11 updates to download and install without permission. Only a handful of Windows 10 releases are still supported by Microsoft, and that's a big problem for people who refuse to update, as older iterations of Windows 10 no longer receive important security patches. To remedy the problem, Microsoft started to force an update on customers who are still running Windows 10 version 20H1, meaning this is a version from the first half of the year 2020. Microsoft began force updates for Windows 11, 23H2, and they have targeted PCs running 21H2 and 22H2, meaning that these were releases in 2021 and 2022. It might be annoying to have a new build forced on you, but Microsoft has previously stated that its actions are by design. If you did a search on how to stop forced Windows updates, you'll find many different Windows solutions to resolve the problem. They all involve navigating through different panels of instructions. You need to be patient not to miss any of the steps. However, life can be much simpler in command mode, which there are only three simple commands to stop forced Windows updates. To do so, you need to open Command Prompt with administrative permissions. If you see the User Account Control prompt, press the Yes button. Now type the following commands one by one, hit Enter, and proceed. Net space stop space WUAUSERV. This stops the Windows Update service. Next step is net stop space bits, BITS. This stops background intelligence transfer service. And the next command is net stop DOSVC, V like Invicta, C and Charlie. It stops delivery optimization service. If you were to do the following search for the commands, just key in simple commands to disable forced Windows updates. Just in case you wish to resume the update process, open Command Prompt with administrative privileges and run the following commands one by one. Net start WUAUSERC. Next is net start bits. And then followed by net start DOSVC. Very simple, and let's keep life simple and not go through the rigmarole with a whole lot of panels to process through. Microsoft nagging pop-up banners wanting to upgrade ahead of Windows 10 end of support. Microsoft challenges persuading users to upgrade from Windows 10 to Windows 11. Users know that what they like, and a large 70% of Windows users have not made the switch from the operating system that was first seen almost a decade ago and has reached the end of its run. Microsoft has a big Windows 10 migration issue on its hands. Right now, the majority of Windows users are using Windows 10. The reason why Windows 10 users aren't upgrading is that they already know what Windows 11 is capable of, and they made the decision not to use it. As such, being shown the upgrade process or going through a comparison list won't solve the issue. If you're one of the holdouts, you can expect to be nagged with constant warnings between now and then. As spotted by Windows' latest, Microsoft is now rolling out two full-screen pop-up banners that remind everyone, including those with supported and unsupported PCs, to upgrade to Windows 11. There are two camps this campaign is designed to reach. The first, with PCs capable of making the switch, and the second, with those that aren't. Windows Latest noted that the banner on an unsupported PC warns that the PC will not receive updates and is not eligible for upgrades, whereas if you have a supported PC, you'll be asked to upgrade to Windows 11 by scheduling the update. Microsoft's warning is clear. It's time to upgrade your PC before end of support. End of support for Windows arrives on October the 14th, 2025. This means your desktop won't receive technical support or security updates after that date. This is a tricky situation. While there will be the usual inertia and swaths of users waiting out to switch as they prefer the older platform, there will be many, many more who don't have the necessary hardware to make the change, and that's an issue for Microsoft. those users and all the systems and platforms they access. And while this is a boon for PC makers, the prospect of this many PCs running out of runway at the same time has other issues. The end of Windows 10 support could turn 240 million PCs into one huge e-waste. Microsoft Windows 11 will help support the struggling PC market as customers prepare for another refresh cycle. But the termination of Windows 10 support could prevent hundreds of millions of devices from getting second lives, leaving many liable to end up in the landfill. A glance at headlines over the last 24 hours might suggest there could be a softening of Microsoft's stance on Windows 10, with news that it's reopening a beta developer channel for Windows 10, which opens the window, so to speak, for new features to bring new features and more improvements to Windows 10 as needed. The bell is tolling for Windows 10, but with hundreds of millions of users still on the older version and many refusing to upgrade, it looks like Microsoft has a few improvements left to make. A new beta version just dropped for Windows insiders. Microsoft has confirmed that the Windows 10 end of support date of October the 14th, 2025 is unchanged. Joining the beta channel on your Windows 10 PC does not change that. The fact that this channel is being opened does reflect the stubborn popularity of the aged operating system, though, and is a likely precursor to the last-minute confusion and panic a year from now when that end-of-life date rushes up on hundreds of millions of users. This for insiders only, and Microsoft also warns that features and experiences included in the Windows 10 builds we flight to beta channel might not ever get released as we try out different concepts and get feedback. Features may change over time, be removed or replaced, and never get released beyond Windows insiders. But more encouraging, maybe, just maybe, some of these features and experiences could show up in updates to Windows 10 for everyone when they're ready. There's a further warning for those wanting to play in this new sandpit. Don't let it confuse your upgrade path to Windows 10. Microsoft warns, we will not automatically upgrade you to Windows 11 when you join the beta channel. The Windows 11 upgrade will be available as optional, where you can choose to upgrade when you are ready. That said, if you switch to the Canary or development channels, then your PC will upgrade, and you only have a small window to roll back to Windows 10. The decline of Intel. A potential repeat of Nokia, Kodak, and BlackBerry. Those names may be familiar to some old-timers. Being a leading company does not mean you will remain there. Once giants in their domains, that's Nokia, Kodak, and BlackBerry, today are shadows of their former selves. Nokia dominated cell phones, but missed the smartphone revolution. Kodak was the king of photography, but neglected digital, and BlackBerry invented smartphones, but couldn't match the market trends. A titan in the chip industry, Intel today, confronts similar difficulties as NVIDIA and AMD fly forward. Could Intel follow the same declining route? Intel CPUs drove most computers worldwide for decades, hence establishing its leadership in the sector. Intel has lately struggled to keep up with rivals like NVIDIA and AMD, though Intel's present fall highlights the unstable character of market leadership and the ongoing necessity of innovation and adaptation, even with its legendary past. But as rivals like NVIDIA and AMD made major technological developments, the terrain started to change. Intel's supremacy began to wane as NVIDIA's mastery of GPU development and AMD's inventiveness in CPUs and GPUs took the stage. AMD's competitive pricing and performance, as well as NVIDIA's emphasis on artificial intelligence, have changed the market and therefore challenged Intel's leadership in the semiconductor sector. Intel's problem, recall, those of the former giants mentioned. Intel's rate of innovation has clearly dropped behind NVIDIA and AMD, who are stretching technological limits. Intel struggled to adjust to new developments. The rapid change in market demands and technological advancements is challenging Intel's once dominant position. Intel is finding it difficult to keep up with artificial intelligence and powerful graphics processing. Intel's inability to predict user preferences and adjust accordingly. Intel runs the danger of becoming irrelevant. Three significant issues that Intel is currently dealing with are threatening its market share. The company is clearly behind NVIDIA and AMD in chip technology, which causes a clear technological lag. For example, NVIDIA leads the market greatly since its developments in GPU technology for artificial intelligence and machine learning have considerably exceeded those of Intel. Likewise, AMD's Ryzen CPUs have drawn customers and companies both for the exceptional prices and performance. This technology disparity caused a loss of market share, particularly in gaming and high-performance computing fields where Intel once dominated. AMD has taken a sizable chunk of the CPU market, further diminishing Intel's impact. NVIDIA's GPU have become the more norm in artificial intelligence research and development. If these problems are not resolved quickly, Intel's future looks alarmingly overall. Intel suffers a permanent loss of its competitive edge without major R&D and strategic realignment investments. The circumstances reflect those of Nokia, Kodak, and BlackBerry, who all failed to adapt to changes in the market and innovate, therefore causing their downfall. Intel might suffer like destiny if it does not act in corrections. Intel's ability to negotiate its present difficulties will determine its destiny. Under a best-case scenario, Intel might turn around and innovate using its resources to create cutting-edge technologies and recover market supremacy. Strategic research and development spending, adopting new technologies like artificial intelligence, and maybe reorganizing to become more agile would all play a part in this. One cannot stress the need to adjust to market expectations and technological advances. Businesses that neglect to keep relevant and innovate run behind each other. One must first understand and then project customer needs. Companies must keep their competitive edge by always matching their goods and services with consumer expectations. These teachings underline Intel's need to remain flexible and customer-centric if it is to escape a similar destiny. Intel has various strategic choices to turn around its fallout. By significantly funding research and development, one can close the technology gap with NVIDIA and AMD. Strategic purchases and alliances can deliver cutting-edge technologies and ideas. Restructuring organizations helps improve agility and effectiveness. Intel most essentially must pay close attention to consumer wants and match product developments to industry developments. Intel can escape the fate of other failed technological giants and restore its market supremacy by acting fast with these ideas. Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston joins me now. Marty, you told me you got some earbuds, ear speakers, something in?
Like it might have been earwax. I'm not sure.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I did get in a couple of interesting acoustic devices to go near the ear canal or in it.
Acoustic,
the first from NWM. It's their MBE-001 wireless next word pair is important on ear speakers. They're not in the ear. They're not headphones that cover the ear.
Okay.
They're called on ear speakers, not earbuds, because they have tiny speakers that put the sound near the ear canal to let you hear everything without sticking anything into your ears. It's air coupled.
So air coupled. So it's not like
not bone conduction.
It's not bone conduction. So it sounds like it's kind of an intermediary between all of these earbuds that we stick, you know, 5 inches into our ears and the headphones. You and I are both wearing headphones, which is on top of the ears. Okay.
Oh, well, actually, ours are both circumoral in that they surround the ears.
Yeah, yeah.
Now having that air coupled is a big plus. Where hearing ambient sound may be critical to your own safety or the well-being of those who are in your chair. So these MBE-001s are true air-coupled acoustic devices that don't use bone conduction. They're there so only the sound enters your ears, no part of their structure. And as a rule, only you will hear it. It's not so loud everybody around you hears it. Now, you can use these with an ordinary Bluetooth connection, or you can get their app to use its agile equalizer and tune its tone.
Okay.
Or put them in their case, when you need to, put them in their case for about 2.5 hours to charge, and they're good for about 6 hours of use.
Okay. All right. So it's 2.5 hours to charge, 6 hours of use. So you get how many charges do you get out of the case?
If I remember right, it's about a quarter in the bud and 3/4 in the case.
Okay. All right.
All right.
So you get a few recharges out of it. All right. That's the key thing. Okay.
The NWM MBE-001 wireless on-ear speakers. And if you didn't write all that down, just listen to the show again. And they're about $180 on Amazon.
All right.
Now, also for your ears, from MyManu, I hope I'm saying that right, MyManu. Well, how many languages do you speak?
Including English?
I don't know.
One. Well, hold on. I know American Sign Language, but I don't speak that.
Of course, Igpayatinle.
not too well, though. I'm really bad at that one.
Not fluent, okay. But thanks to the MyJuno app, if you subscribe to it and you're using MyManu Click S earbuds, well, they can translate among 3 languages at once in real time from a collection of more than 3 dozen, total of 37 available languages. Now, I don't speak 37 languages.
Okay.
There's one I'm pretty good with, but that's about it. Okay. I can't tell you how good it may be at translations. And I know some users have complained about short run times per charge. So I will suggest that if you want to try these, buy them just in case, buy them from a place that accepts returns.
Okay. So Amazon accepts returns. Are they available on Amazon?
They're about $100 on Amazon.
Okay. All right.
Now, one other piece of tech I haven't seen to review yet, but it fascinates me, is from Sony.
Yeah.
It's a new camera that has more megapixels than a shelf full of cameras that you're used to.
Okay.
It's a kind of camera that's used in spy satellites and aerial surveillance. Okay.
Sure.
And they're starting to be used in drone applications, which is really interesting. Okay. They're starting to be used in medical surveillance of small things with tons of detail. It's just mind-boggling and fascinating to think about what all that resolution can do for people with analytical minds, and what happens when you're able to feed that in real time through AI.
Yeah. The ability we've got with cameras is all of a sudden it seems to be skyrocketing. And yet there's been a decrease in interest.
And standalone cameras, yes, except for special purposes, because we've got all those lovely wasted pixels in our phone.
Right. Yes. Exactly. Right?
What are you going to do with 100 megapixels in the phone if you can only see a quarter of a megapixel on the screen?
Yeah. Exactly. It's interesting how you mentioned that. Yeah.
It's not like you're printing a high resolution bed sheet anymore.
Yeah.
And for those things, by the way, huge blankets of LEDs that light like fabric are just... I went to the NAB show where they're used in backdrops in studios and movie sets.
Yes.
I'm seeing them in education where they're used instead of projectors to let whole walls light up with canned messages and all of that. And you don't have to worry so much about replacing the projector bulb, right? So it's the flip side of all this. It's not that resolution yet. You're not going to get, you know, football fields onto a teaspoon with the LED displays. Mm-hmm. But with these cameras, wow, you could probably fill every office in the Pentagon with an image and have a different image in every office.
Wild stuff. Oh, man. Just the world is changing before our eyes.
That's about time.
Yeah, it's about time. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer Club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The New York Amateur Computer Club has a presentation, ATSC 3.0, The Next Generation of Television, Thursday, August the 8th, 2024, meeting time is 7 p.m., online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is nyacc.org. Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, August the 9th, 2024, meeting time is 7 p.m., online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is limac.org. King's Byte Computer Club meets Tuesday, August the 13th, 2024, meeting time is 7 p.m., and they meet at the Park Plaza Restaurant, located at 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn. For more information, the phone number is 347-278-7320. Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, August the 22nd. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m. Online virtual meeting. Website is bcug.com. Tech Ed Connect. Tuesday, September the 3rd. Meeting time is 7 p.m. In-person general meetings are back. Scarsdale Public Library, 54 Olmsted Road, Scarsdale, New York, zip code 10583. Online virtual meeting via Zoom, wpcug.org. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, September the 6th. Meeting time is 8 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. Happy computing! Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.